Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the Dugout Blues Dodgers podcast. I am Jared Massey, joined by Dustin Nosler. Say hi, Dustin.
Hello, hello.
And we are doing this podcast during the NFL draft. We will be very, very distracted. We apologize in advance. Dustin's looking forward to the Rams pick, which is coming up very soon. I am afraid to admit this since I write about the Dodgers, but I am a Niner fan. Boo. So hopefully you don't hold it against me. But we're here to talk about baseball. We're here to talk about the Dodgers and the week and a half that was, since we're doing this on a Thursday. The Dodgers are not infallible. As it turns out, they dropped the series to the Milwaukee Brewers. They dropped a series to the Atlanta Braves. What really stuck out for you, Dustin, in terms of the last three series the Dodgers played?
You know, they did well against Houston, which was to be expected. Like you said, they dropped the series at Milwaukee. One of the games, there was a close play at the plate where the guy was actually out. I believe it was Nigel Morgan, but the ump called him safe. It wasn't the greatest of throws from Matt Kemp from center field, but it should have been enough to get the job done. You know, losses like that are going to happen. It's baseball. You know, not that a loss in, you know, April means any less than a loss in September, but you know, it's going to happen. They're going to win some games they probably shouldn't have won. They're going to lose some games they should have won. It's just the way baseball is. You know, kind of concerned about Javi Guerra's last two outings. The one on Tuesday wasn't horrible, but last night's outing, you know, especially taking a ball off the jaw, it looked like a line drive off of the bat of Brian McCann, just kind of scares you at first, but then he stayed in the game and just totally unraveled. So we'll see how long a leash Mattingly is going to give Guerra. He's already come out and said that he's still the closer, but we all know Kenley Jansen's waiting there in the wings to step in whenever he needs to step in.
Yeah, and Kenley's been a lot better of late. He got off to a bit of a rough start in the season, but he's, you know, striking out guys left and right. With Guerra, I was surprised and really shocked that he stayed in. They let him stay in after taking one off the jaw.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a dangerous, dangerous play. And even, yeah, he came out after the game. He passed all his concussion tests. But, I mean, having a ball hit you in the face has to affect you mentally. I don't care who you are. I don't care how much mental fortitude you have. Getting hit in the face with a baseball has to affect you. And I won't say that's the reason he blew the save. I won't say that's the reason the Dodgers lost. But I was really shocked that that happened. Yeah, just two heartbreaking losses over the past 2 days.
And you know, just a little side note, Jake Lemmerman, my boy, he got hit in the face by an errant throw during batting practice a few games ago, and he ended up getting scratched from the lineup. Javi Guerra takes a line drive off the bat of Brian McCann, which had to be coming at him 100 miles an hour, off his jaw, and he stayed in the game. So, yeah, like you said, it was kind of questionable that he stayed in no matter what test he passed and how he said he was feeling.
Yeah, I'm one to err on the side of caution, and I again, you can tell me, yeah, he's fine. Yeah, his jaw isn't broken. Yeah, he doesn't have a concussion, but it still has to affect someone. I would not trust a player to make that judgment call because they're always going to opt to stay in. You are never, almost never, going to hear a player say, "Oh yeah, I have to be taken out." Those guys are pariahs. Those guys are called crybabies. So it's really up to the training staff and the coaching staff to make that decision for them. And I really question whether or not that was the best course of action in that situation. Some other games, like you said, they did take the series from the Astros. Chad Billingsley had something of a disaster outing on Sunday, giving up 12 runs. The team did. Did you see anything wrong with him? I watched the game and I saw that he was just missing out and over the plate. The pitch on which he gave up the grand slam wasn't that bad. It just got a lot of the plate. It was low in the zone. And Jordan Schaefer just knocked it just out of reach of Andre Ethier, who got the tip of his glove on it but couldn't haul it in. Do you see that type of start really, you know, affecting Billingsley, who has been criticized for not having that winning mentality? Or do you think that this is something that he can kind of look past and just move on from?
Yeah, you know, he can't pitch with the lead. He doesn't have the – he doesn't have it between the ears, any kind of stupid cliche you want to say. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't see the game as I was driving back from Southern California. I saw the first inning, and I saw him give up that home run to Carlos Lee. And, yeah, that if that was any indication how the day was going to go, he missed with the fastball over the plate. And, you know, no matter how poor a hitter Carlos Lee is, you know, these days, he can still get around on a fastball and yank it to the, you know, the short porch in left field in Houston. You know, it's a bad start. He's been flat-out dominant in his other starts. I'm not too concerned about it yet. You know, he's going to have a bad start. Every pitcher has a bad start. Clayton Kershaw had a bad start earlier this season. He might have one or two more this season. I'm not overly concerned about Billingsley.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think Billingsley's gotten a bad rap over the years. And, you know, guys do have bad starts, like you said. I remember on Jackie Robinson Day, Kershaw slamming his glove into the bench, mm-hmm. coming out after giving up some runs. And, you know, luckily the team fought back to win. But, yeah, I mean, you can't expect perfection, and you can't expect even very good results every time out. These guys are human beings. They're going to struggle. One guy who hasn't been struggling yet this season, very, very surprisingly, is Ted Lilly. He has been just absolutely dominant since returning from the DL early this season. He could have been 3-0 had the lead been preserved yesterday, but man, he has just looked excellent. What have you seen from him that would indicate any type of improvement, or, you know, has he just carried over his second half resurgence from last year to this spring? I mean, has there been anything that you've seen from him that would indicate anything different, or do you think he's just working on doing the same thing that's been working for him in previous second halves?
Yeah, I mean, when you think of the word dominant, you don't usually think of Ted Lilly and his 87-mile-an-hour fastball. It's just amazing what he's been able to do so far. He started the season on the DL, had a rehab start with Rancho, and got lit up. And yet, since he's been back with the Dodgers this season, he's been good. He's been really good. The walks, the strikeout-to-walk ratio is actually higher than or worse than you would expect. He struck out 11 and walked 8, and he's known for having really good control. The one thing he hasn't done is given up a home run in 20 innings, and he's working on a streak. Forgive me, I don't know how long the streak has been, but he was close to 30, giving up 30 home runs last year, and didn't, for like the last 4 or 5 starts of the season, he didn't give up a home run. He hasn't given up a home run yet this season. So that could explain some of his success. Just keeping the ball in the park.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's 9 starts that he hasn't given up a home run, which is fantastic for any pitcher, let alone a guy who's known as a fly ball pitcher like Lilly. He's just been really impressive, and it just seems that he's making the right pitches at the right times. Like you said, his strikeout rate, his walk rate, not great, but he's getting it done. And I think he's trusting his defense a little more, pitching contact. I know that, you know, the new school of sabermetric thought loathes that idea of pitching to contact. But I think situationally, yeah, if you're gonna throw a pitch that you think can get, you know, result in an out, in a weak contact grounder, I would rather you throw that than try to blow a guy away with, like you said, an 87-mile-an-hour fastball. It just really seems like he's changed his approach. The strikeouts are down. I think he only had 2 strikeouts last night. But you can't argue with the results.
Not yet. And his hits per 9 is at 4.1, which he's not going to be able to keep up the entire season. But, you know, that shows you that he's not relying on the strikeout. He's only averaging 4.9 per 9 innings. So, you know, he's like you said, making the right pitches at the right time and limiting the damage.
Yeah, and that's something that he really needs to do as he gets older, because he's not going to be a big strikeout guy.
Yeah.
You know, with with that depleting velocity that you can project down the road, especially next season. So on the offensive side, Matt Kemp put up a very Christopher Columbus-esque line in the past week. He OPS'd 1492 with four home runs. He drove in only six, but he drew five walks. And that's been something that we've been keeping a close eye on because, as we know, he was a little impatient to start the season, but you can't really blame him when everything you're hitting is falling in, you know, for a safe hit. So, James Loney is a guy I actually wanted to talk about, too. He really looks like he's gotten back to the hitting mechanics that he was putting into use last year. He's crouching more, which is something that I am very happy to see. And over the past week, he hit 316. He drew three walks. He hit three triples, and he homered, hit a monster home run in Houston, which I'm sure was nice for him since he grew up in Texas. Have you noticed that type of difference in his swing and his hitting mechanics?
Yeah, you know, he's definitely making better contact, and he's been the whipping boy the last couple of weeks for us just because he's been really awful.
Yeah.
You know, he's, like you said, he's making solid contact. He's not striking out a lot. He's walks to strikeout is 8-8, so 1-1. But, you know, he hit that home run. He's got five doubles. You know, he's hanging in there and, you know, just getting back to where he was for the last 2 months of last season. If he can do that, then maybe the Dodgers don't need to go out and try to acquire a first baseman before the trade deadline. Maybe they could focus on third base or left field or something. You know, he's going to play gold glove first base, you know, defensive first base. He'll dig those throws out like nobody else, and that's a really valuable thing to have. But he needs to continue to stay focused on doing what he's doing what he did, you know, in August and September to keep him where he is. You know, he's going to slump. It's going to happen. All these guys are going to slump. But he needs to show that he can produce for an entire season at this level because he definitely has the ability to do so.
Yeah, I agree with you there. One of the main things I'm concerned about is how well he's going to hit lefties. Overall, he's only batting 154 against them, but, I mean, that's in 13 at-bats. That's a microscopic sample size. He's drawn just one walk, has a pair of doubles for 522 OPS. I think that, you know, as far as his offense goes, the first thing he needs to concentrate on is really getting his mechanics in order, really maintaining that wide base, that crouch that allows him to torque his lower half and, you know, rocket the ball. Second thing, he needs to hit lefties. I mean, we cannot, you know, stand a guy who can only OPS 500 against lefties. That is not an everyday player. And, you know, I don't want to see Juan Rivera over there 100, or not 100, but, you know, 40, 50 times this season, even though he has hit lefties in the past. I really think that's going to be the biggest key for his season because it looks like he's gotten the mechanics down. He's incorporating them and having success, even a small amount. But that's really where it comes into play is he going to be able to hit same-handed pitching? The same can go for Andre Ethier, who's only batting 250 against lefties. And, you know, he had the two doubles and a triple, but his OPS is only 693. So these are two guys who need to be cogs in the offense that are going to have to prove that they're going to be valuable against any pitcher. And I don't mean they have to produce every game, but they can't be guys who are only going to be valuable against righties.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's going to be every left-handed hitter's, you know, nemesis for till the end of time is hitting left-handed pitching. Obviously, Loney and Ethier have not hit left-handed pitching well in the past. You know, they're just needing to hit it well enough to justify playing them against lefties. Otherwise, they become platoon players and their value decreases, especially Ethier, who's looking like the Dodgers might want to extend him long term. you know, there's no doubt he can hit righties, but the lefties is a different story.
Yeah, and just looking the past week, A.J. Ellis had himself a very nice week, hitting .353, 6 for 17. Juan Uribe went 4 for 13, all singles, and no walks. So his line was 308, 308, 308. That's very Aaron Miles-esque, I would say. And, you know, I'm loving the fact that Jerry Harrison Jr. is getting some starts. He hit 294 over the last week, but all singles. But at least he can draw a walk. And he's been playing fantastic defense. I'm hoping, this is very, very early in the season, but I'm hoping that he can turn into another Jamie Carroll type, where he's a utility guy at first, then comes in and just starts, you know, putting up decent numbers. He's not going to be a superstar. He's not going to carry the offense. But I think that he's the type of guy who can give the Dodgers a steady presence over a guy like Uribe, who just isn't going to be producing that much.
Yeah, it's likely Uribe is not going to, you know, hit 308 every week, you know, walks or no walks or what have you. Uribe has also been known to play solid defense, but, you know, as you get older, as, you know, it's really hard to say good things about Juan Uribe. I'm struggling right now. Harrison has been playing amazing defense at third. Saved the game a couple of times in Milwaukee, if I recall. Like you said, if he can develop how Jamie Carroll did last season, I think he's more talented than Jamie Carroll. So I think he could be even better. So let's see what happens. You know, if we are talking in a month and Harrison's starting to get even more playing time, I wouldn't be opposed to it as long as he's producing.
Yeah, and the Dodgers over the past week and a half, lost their first two home games. Not really expecting them to go, you know, be perfect at home. They have a great pitching matchup coming up tomorrow, Clayton Kershaw. And actually, it looks like they're pushing Strasburg back to Saturday, and that's Ross Detweiler is the projected starter for tomorrow. That's disappointing. That would have been a really, really nice pitching matchup. But then you'll get Billingsley and Strasburg, which should be pretty fun. And, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. You know, Washington is a really good team, and it's really weird to say that. they were kind of a joke for a while, and all of a sudden they are, you know, atop the AL or the NL East, and it's really going to be interesting to see what the Dodgers can do with another quality opponent. So moving on to the minor leagues, starting in Albuquerque, in case you missed it, Alex Castellanos, who was absolutely mashing for the Isotopes, has been placed on the disabled list and is going to miss a little bit of time. They're not saying it's going to be a long time, minor injury. And I was hoping that he would get the call if Juan Rivera had to go on the disabled list, but it looks like Rivera's healthy. So, yeah, I guess Castellanos' time is going to have to wait. Who did you see in AAA over the past week who caught your eye?
It's hard not to be impressed with Castellanos. He even was named the Pacific Coast League Player of the Week for last week. He has 15 extra base hits already this season in out of 26 hits, good enough for a .746 slugging percentage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to temper our enthusiasm when it comes to, you know, guys in the PCL, the biggest hitter's haven there is. But just everything you've told me and we've talked about, and things I've read elsewhere, it just seems like this guy might be coming into his own. Inflated numbers or no, he's going to have to prove it at the major league level. And, you know, it would have been nice for him to come up and replace Rivera, but apparently Rivera is not going on the DL quite yet. He might not go on the DL, but Castellanos going on the DL, you know, that kind of takes him out of the equation for now, which is fine. He should probably get some more seasoning in AAA anyway.
Yeah, it seems like the club is intent on having him develop as a second baseman, and it's going to be a process. He's not quite there yet. But I would have rather had him at third so he could take over for Uribe, but, you know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
We'll have to move on from that. Mark Ellis.
I was just about to say, Mark Ellis has actually done a pretty solid job so far. I mean, I was not totally upset with his signing like a lot of people were. Yeah, 2 years kind of sucks. They didn't pay him that much money. I mean, he got less money than a guy like Clinton Barnes. If the Dodgers had given Clinton Barnes that money, I know his name is Barmas, I call him Barnes. If the Dodgers had given him that money, I would have been pissed. But Ellis has got a .368 on base percentage, and he's second on the team in runs scored. You know, hitting in front of Matt Kemp will do that for you, but the guy can get on base, and he plays great defense at second. And if the Dodgers want to keep Castellanos at second for the future, that's fine. But it would have been nice to see him kind of break in at third, like you were saying, because there's more of a immediate, I can play in the majors quicker than, you know, he's probably not going to unseat Ellis. The only way he plays second is if there's an injury, would be my guess.
Right. We're coming up on the Rams selection, and it's Michael Brockers, VP out of LSU, and Dustin is not happy? Is that what that...
I don't know. Indifferent, I guess. I mean, I know the Rams need a defensive tackle. A couple years ago when they took Bradford, I wanted them to take Ndamukong Suh. I was a minority, obviously, on that one. If they had done that, they could have just taken Robert Griffin this year, but, you know...
There you go.
What, you know. I wanted DeCastro.
Uh-huh.
I think they need to... With Jeff Fisher in... And, yeah, he's an offensive-minded coach in terms of, like, pounding the ball, running the ball hard. They got Steven Jackson back there who is not getting any younger. They're going to end up taking a running back with one of their 3 second-round picks, or they'll trade up into the late first later tonight. You know, defensive tackle is a big need, but I think taking DeCastro, taking the top-rated guard at that spot would have been just fine with me. And who knows, maybe Brockers will end up being really good. Fletcher Cox was the best DT in this draft, and he went a couple picks before to Philadelphia, who traded up with Seattle. So, you know, it's a wait and see for me on this. But, you know, the Rams have some really good defensive ends with Chris Long and last year's first-round pick, Robert Quinn, who I thought was an absolute steal there. So we'll see how it works out.
So there you have it, folks. A bonus NFL draft exclusive with Rams Insider. Dustin Osler, maybe?
Yeah,
perhaps.
Yeah, let's go with that.
On the side. So, like I said, we were going to be distracted. I wanted to be very deliberate about it. Mm-hmm. And now we can get back to talking about baseball. Scott Van Slyke, who looks like he would be the next guy up since Castellanos is on the DL, had himself a ho-hum week, hit .364 with 4 doubles and a home run, and he walked 5 times. I mean, the guy is just the very definition of late bloomer, I think. He's walked more than he struck out this year. He has 11 extra base hits in 19 games. What do you think are his prospects of coming up this season and actually contributing, Dustin?
I think he could be up sooner rather than later if he keeps hitting. He's got the pedigree with Andy as his father. You know, he is, like you said, and we've talked about this before, he's a late bloomer. Just, you know, I don't want to get too excited about a guy who's 25 and in AAA, you know, and he's relegated to a corner, either outfield or first base, and he's not exactly known for his gloves, so he's going to have to do it all with his bat. But, you know, if there's an injury later on, like if Rivera doesn't recover or Loney somehow falters, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to going with Van Slyke before going the trade route.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he should get some sort of attention, you know, during the season if there's injury, if someone falters. You know, I don't think that Loney will be a problem. My bigger concern is with Juan Rivera becoming just a platoon guy that you start against lefties. So, I mean, you have Tony Gwynn, who's not exactly known for his bat like his father was, but yeah, I think that that he has a decent chance of coming up. Another guy I wanted to talk about is Josh Wall, who gave up a hit in two innings on April 22nd. That was the first hit he had given up in six appearances. The guy was a converted starter. He was drafted in 2005, and his fastball is getting up into the upper 90s, and he's touching 100. You know, the Dodgers do have some relief depth in minor leagues if guys keep faltering, if guys get hurt. And Wall might be one of the top guys on the board because he's on the 40-man roster, and he was moved to the pen last year. He had success there, and now he's just blowing guys away. His command's been a little off. He's walked four batters in eight and a third innings, but he's only allowed two runs on four hits. And, yeah, he could just be a kind of a pop-up guy that you can plug in the bullpen and not really miss a beat.
Yeah, you know, I could definitely see Wall coming up here pretty quick. He's pretty much taken to the relief role pretty well. He was drafted as a starter, you know, and it didn't work out, obviously. But he's got a live arm. There's no doubt about that. I'm kind of curious why they haven't given him the shot already, and they've been kind of jerking around with Nate Eovaldi. You know, I'm sure we're going to talk about that, but you know, they're both on the 40-man. I know Eovaldi has, you know, experience in the majors already, but they've been kind of screwing with him the last two starts, and now Eovaldi's apparently on the way to L.A., still not knowing who he's replacing, and it's apparently a reliever. So that's why I say Josh Wall might have been a little more logical in that sense.
Yeah, and I think we can transition from Wall in AAA to Eovaldi in AA. The first time that Eovaldi was pulled early was in his previous his start before his last, and that was because Chad Billingsley was apparently having groin issues between starts, and the powers that be didn't know if he was going to make his next start. So they pulled Eovaldi just in case, had Billingsley throw between starts. He was okay. Eovaldi goes back to Chattanooga. Now Eovaldi's pulled again, coming up, and we don't know who it is. We don't know who he's replacing. He could replace Mike Antonini, who came up to replace Matt Greer. He could replace, my guess would be, Mike McDougal.
Let's just hope it's McDougal.
McDougal has been ineffective this year, to put it gently.
Oh, my God. What a terrible, terrible re-signing. There you go. Just waste $1 million on him.
Yeah, well, it is, you know, Ned Colletti's still in charge of player acquisition, so
yeah.
You know, I would have rather had the pen of guys like, you know, Tolleson and Wall and guys like that, but I don't run the club.
Right.
Yet. Dun dun dun. No. So yeah, we'll see what happens with Eovaldi. I really wanted him to continue developing as a starter. He was having success as a starter. He just loses a lot of his value if he goes to the pen. And sure, they could use another good reliever, but, you know, that's always less valuable than even a number four starter. A good reliever is not as valuable as an average number four starter. So that's always been my belief, is to go with guys as starters as long as you possibly can, and then if it doesn't work out, move them to the bullpen. So we'll see what happens with Eovaldi and if he can develop as a reliever, if he moves back to the rotation. We can only speculate on what the Dodgers are thinking with him. Another guy, Alan Webster, he's had a few rough outings recently. Today he pitched, went five innings, allowed six runs on six hits with six strikeouts, a very demonic line. I should say six earned runs. And in his previous outing, he gave up eight hits in five innings, though he only gave up two earned runs. He's just giving up a lot of hits, and I'm not sure what to make of it. Is it something that you're worried about?
A little bit, to be honest. I am a little worried about it. He faltered the last three starts, or he had a really poor three-start stretch to end last season. And he's come out, and he's had a couple of decent starts, but he hasn't exactly been dominant like he was with Rancho last season. I understand pitching to contact. I understand he's not going to be a 9 or 10 strikeout per 9 guy when he makes it to the majors. But he's giving up way too many hits for my liking. Not counting me today. He's already at 13.7 per 9 and a 197 whip, and that's definitely not going to get it done. Although we did see Mike Newman, is that his name? Scouting the Sal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he said he was sitting at 94 to 96, which is great news, but I don't know if he's not locating his fastball well enough or his breaking pitches aren't working or what it is, but he's got to get it. The pitching coach down there has to get him figured out. He has to figure out why he's giving up so many hits, because he has a good enough stuff to not be giving up this many hits.
Yeah, that's always concerning when you have a guy who's throwing that hard who's giving up hits. Is the ball easy to see coming out of his hand? Is he just throwing it over the plate? Are his off-speed pitches not working for him? I mean, he has at least two off-speed pitches that are reliable weapons for him in his slider and his changeup. His changeup is one of the better off-speed pitches in the Dodgers system. So it's really a matter of, I think his command is off. You know, you look at his line today, he threw 102 pitches, only 64 of them were for strikes. I think it's far more a matter of him getting his mechanics under control, making sure that his arm slot is consistent. I saw him pitch, I want to say last week, and he has the type of delivery that's just hard to imagine seeing being conducive to throwing strikes, because his arm's so quick, it moves through the drive line so fast that it's kind of hard to control where his release point is going and if he's going to be able to make it over the plate consistently. And that's definitely something that he's going to have to work on moving forward. He was having a good start up until the fourth inning today, and Chris Withrow, who was filling in for Nathan Eovaldi, who was pulled prematurely and is on his way to L.A., Withrow was having a nice little start of his own until, I believe, his fifth inning of work, or possibly his sixth inning of work yesterday, before he fell apart. I saw Ethan Martin start. I want to clarify that the Chattanooga Lookouts don't have a broadcast feed of their home games, but two other teams in the Southern League, the Jacksonville Suns and the Tennessee Smokies, do air their games online, so I was able to catch those. And Martin looked surprisingly good in his most recent outing. He went six innings, allowed four hits, three runs, two walks, and he struck out six. Not a dominant line by any means. However, both of those walks probably should have been strikeouts, as he made very, very close two-strike pitches that both appeared to be in the strike zone but weren't called. And, you know, his mechanics looked pretty good. He looked like he was online. He looked like he was really calm and collected on the mound, and it just didn't go his way. You know, so he could be a guy who you could see making some noise this year, you know, down the road, probably in June and July, if everything stays consistent for him. Who else is there in Chattanooga that you noticed this week, Dustin?
Sean Tolleson. You've been pimping him lately on Twitter, saying that he should be called up.
Uh-huh.
The guy has 15 strikeouts in 8 innings and hasn't walked a batter. He's only given up 4 hits. It's obvious the guy has nothing left to prove in AA, and they're probably not going to toy with him in AAA. So basically, this is just to keep him warm until maybe the Dodgers release Mike McDougal or Jamie Wright or who have you, because he's not on the 40-man roster yet, so they would have to make a 40-man roster move for him to even come up.
Yeah, I was actually surprised that he wasn't on the 40-man. I thought he'd be up, and I wanted him to make the club out of spring training, and he pitched pretty well. I thought he had an outside shot, but it just didn't materialize. So he's going to continue dominating until they need him, apparently. I really don't know why he's still down there, but apparently they are content with who they have at the major league level, even though it doesn't seem like the strongest of groups. Another guy I wanted to talk about was JT Wise. He was hitting .344 and putting up an OPS of .963. He is old. He's 25, so he's a guy who, yeah, he could be a late bloomer maybe, but I mean, he was drafted as a 23-year-old college senior out of Oklahoma. He plays catcher. He's been playing a lot of first base. Not the highest of upsides, but you know, if he continues hitting, they're going to have to give him a look eventually.
You would think. He's going to turn 26 on June 2nd. He has a career 900 OPS in the minors. It's obvious he can put the bat on the ball. It just stands to, you know, be seen if he can do it against advanced competition. So far, he's handling Double-A pretty well. But like you said, he's old for the league. He doesn't have any defensive value, so it's going to be he's one of those all bat guys that the Dodgers seem to have a lot of these days, and apparently a lot of late bloomers.
Yeah, and we can hope and pray that he's a late bloomer because the Dodgers need all the bats they can get.
Mm-hmm.
Moving down to High A, Dustin and I went to a baseball game together. It was on April 20th, and we thought initially that Zach Lee was going to be pitching, but when Lee heard that Dustin would be in town, he decided to take the day off. No, I'm kidding. There was a rainout, there was a doubleheader, and Lee was given an additional day off to rest. So instead we saw Angel Sanchez, who struggled, just really wasn't pitching well. I mean, he was throwing fairly hard, at least 91 to 94, and a couple times on the board, I saw him up 96 and 98. I'm not sure if those readings were really that accurate, but he has been up pretty high in the past. So I don't know. What did you think of him? What was your initial impression of Angel Sanchez?
I liked his delivery. It was a lot more smooth and clean. And it's the first time I've seen him, I think, pitch. I didn't catch him at all on the internet when he was with Great Lakes last year. I thought he had a nice, smooth delivery. You were talking to me after the game about a couple things, and I'll let you talk about that. But looked nice and easy. He's got good velocity. Like you said, I don't think that 98 was legit because I can't remember who it was, but somebody hit 101 later in the game, and there's absolutely no way anybody but maybe Juan Rodriguez could hit 100 out of the Quakes bullpen. It had to be a combination of hitting the ball. Both times there were really high readings. There was a contact made, so that's probably what happened there. But it just seems like he was leaving the ball over the plate way too much. Kind of had Alan Webster syndrome. I took some video of him, so I'm in the process of editing that up a little bit, and hopefully we'll have that posted here before too long. It wasn't the greatest of starts, but you know, at least I got to see a top Dodger prospect pitch. It could have been, you know, the fifth starter who I don't even remember his name off the top of my head.
Andres Santiago.
Yeah, it could have been him. Who you know, no offense to him, he's just not much of a prospect.
Yeah, he was just leaving the ball over the plate way too much. He was up with everything. He was throwing his slider. He didn't throw his changeup, and his changeup might actually be his best pitch. And he just really wasn't throwing it. The guys were sitting on his fastball. He was throwing it, and he wasn't locating it. His top half and bottom half were getting out of sync, so he was having to overcompensate or slow down his arm. just a lot of problems that, you know, luckily he's only 22, and he's got the raw arm to be something good. He has a lot of upside, which is a dangerous word to use. But, yeah, I see him bouncing back. He had a bump in the road when he debuted with the Loons last year. I think his ERA in the first month was over 5. So he's a guy, you know, I actually interviewed him, and I posted the interview for subscribers on my website, ladugout.com. And don't forget to go to Dustin's website, feelingkindofblue.com. Just quick plugs. I really think that he has the wherewithal and the smarts and the talent to bounce back and become something good. But right now he needs to work on his command. I think that's going to be the biggest thing for him. Zach Lee is actually pitching tonight in Lancaster, which is an evil, evil place to pitch. Lancaster is one of the worst places in all of baseball to pitch. There is a jet stream there that will blow you out of the stadium. He's gotten off to a great start, Lee. In his first 4 games, his ERA is 2.95 in 21 and a third innings. He's allowed 3 walks and 25 strikeouts. The only blemish is the fact that he's allowed 4 home runs. And I think that's really a function of him almost being too precise with his pitches. I'd take a few more walks here and there if it meant less homers, because he's just so good at locating the ball that sometimes he puts it in the strike zone too much and guys just hammer it. Who else has been noticeable on the Quakes?
Yeah, no, of course you gotta say Lee. The 25-3 strikeouts a walk is just really good. You probably couldn't ask for much more than that. He's at a 10.5 K per 9 right now, and I don't think he's going to keep that rate up. But he can be a 7-plus strikeout per 9 inning guy and still be really effective, be a number 2, be a number 3 starter. One of my favorite guys is Garrett Gould, who kind of got roughed up in his last start. But the funny thing is he has 28 strikeouts in 16 and a third innings, good for a 15.4 K per 9. So when he's getting outs, he's getting them via strikeout, but he's giving up a lot of hits. This is 11.6 hits per 9 and a 178 whip. So hopefully it's just him getting acclimated to the league. Hopefully he can bring those numbers down a bit, you know, as the season progresses.
Yeah, a little bit of stat scouting. let's try that again. A little bit of stat scouting tells me that his velocity isn't back where it needs to be, the 21 hits and 16 in the third innings, but his curveball is just ungodly, and that's what's led to the 28 strikeouts and 16 in the third. He has just an amazing curveball, and he can throw it for strikes, he can bury it, you know, backdoor, backup. He really can do whatever he wants with it, and I think that's what, you know, has allowed him to have that type of success. So, yeah, I haven't seen any reports on his velocity, but I would love to see where it is, just to check to make sure that he's where he should be. Chris Reed, last year's first rounder, he's gotten off to a nice start. His ERA is about 3 2/3 in 22 innings. He struck out 25 batters, walked 8.
Yeah, you know, with Reed, he's proven me wrong so far, and I hope he keeps it up. You know, I still contend that he'll probably end up in the bullpen, either because of durability issues, stamina, or not being able to develop that third pitch. But here's hope, and he proves me wrong. Nothing will make me happier than to be wrong with that.
Absolutely, I would 10 times out of 10 be wrong on a guy who I don't think is going to succeed. What has impressed me most about him is he's only allowed 13 hits in 22 innings, showing that, you know, guys are just having problems putting the ball in play against him. And on the offensive side, we actually saw Scott Wingo triple twice for us, which I thought was nice.
Yeah.
He is a walking machine. He already has 6 walks in his first 7 games of the year, which is why I was so confused when I saw someone compare him to Darwin Barney.
Oh, God, that's thinking, not cool.
Why? What are you? Why are you doing this to me? You know, sure, they're both moderate, you know, moderately sized guys with, you know, that play second base that were drafted out of college. I guess that's where the comparison comes from. But, you know, Wingo is just a walking machine and really, really he doesn't have the highest upside, but I think he is one of those high floor guys, meaning that his, you know, downside is probably a bench player. But I think he's a guy who will be able to contribute at the major league level.
Yeah, I mean, he stole three bases in his first game, too. You know, I was actually really impressed with him. I didn't think much of him coming into the season. Didn't even have him ranked in my top 50. It's probably an oversight on my part. Not that, you know, I'm not the be-all, end-all by any means. But I was impressed with what I saw. And, you know, my favorite thing might have been the high Sox. I love the high Sox.
I love them, too. Anyone who wears high Sox is a good guy in my book, unless they play for the Giants. Berries.
and Wingo's triples, they were legit. They weren't like, oh, the fielder made a, it went off the fielder's glove or something. The first one was the left center field, and it just kept tailing away from the center fielder, and he scooted all the way to third without much, you know, contention from the defense. So he's deceptively quick, I think.
Yeah, he definitely drove the ball, and I think that was very important to see from him. Update on Leon Landry, who I know you were really concerned with, who hasn't played recently. Would you like to do the honors of updating his medical status?
Yeah, we were in the press box. It was probably about 5:30, 6 before the game at 7. And one of the scouts who were in there asked about the status of Landry, like what's going on with him. And I believe it was the Visalia play-by-play radio guy said he had a concussion. He must have suffered it in the second game of the doubleheader the previous Sunday. And he was actually placed on the minor league DL. And so that explains why Jock Peterson ended up with the Quakes, at least in my eyes. And then Peterson goes and hurts his groin. We found out later on before the game. I saw you tweet him. He said he's back in Arizona, so he's not going to play for the Quakes for a little while. He hurt his left groin, I believe, which wasn't the groin that kept him out to start the season.
Yeah, he only has two, and yet he's figured out a way to injure both of them. So, yeah, he'll probably be... I see him being in full season ball when he comes back. I don't see the point in putting him back in rookie ball. Yeah. But, yeah, or... Yeah, and the Loons outfield is pretty stacked with Baldwin and Shebler and Cuevas. So I see him returning to the Quakes, you know, fairly soon. It didn't seem like a really serious injury. Maybe they're just being a little cautious with it.
Yeah, and it just figures that the game we go to, that I go to, you know, I live 6.5 hours away from Rancho. I was down there for a conference, and, you know, I was like, all right, I'm going to get to see Jock Peterson now. You know, I was hoping I was going to see Leon Landry. Neither of them played. Didn't get to see Zach Lee pitch, you know. Yeah. It could have been worse. I got to see some good guys. But, like, the two top prospects offensively, at least in my eyes, didn't get to play for the Quakes. And that just kind of – it didn't bug me. It's just like it was a bummer.
Yeah, they heard you were coming. So, moving on to the Great Lakes Loons. One guy I wanted to mention was Jared Martin, who I actually wanted the Dodgers to pick in the 2008 draft. They ended up passing on him, but after he was drafted by Baltimore in 2009, spent a few years in their season in their system, he was actually acquired this past offseason for Dana Evelyn. And he has gotten off to a great start up until today, of course, because today is when Kevin Goldstein, a baseball prospectus, mentions him in his minor league write-up, starts touting him as this sleeper in the Dodgers system.
I think he's a deep sleeper. Yeah, and we both had our guesses of who that might have been, and we were both wrong.
We were 0 for us. Yes, we were. he comes into the day with a sparkling ERA and leaves it by giving up 7 runs on 11 hits in 5 innings.
Oof.
Including two home runs, one of which was a grand slam.
Oof.
He looked, it's hard to say that he looked good giving up seven runs, but I can see what the fuss is about. The guy has a legit fastball. I heard in the spring that he was up to 95, and that was corroborated by Kevin Goldstein's report on him. Ryan O'Sullivan, who I saw during spring training, I saw him up to 98. He pitched three innings today, gave up a run, and struck out four. He's another guy worth keeping an eye on. And there are actually two other guys that I want to talk about on the Loons, both on the pitching staff, if you will indulge me, Dustin.
Yes, sir.
So the first guy I want to talk about is Jose Dominguez, who was signed a few years back. It didn't really throw that hard. Actually, he was signed in 07. He was signed as a 16-year-old. He didn't really throw too hard. He was about 90 to 91, showed a good breaking ball. This spring, I saw him up to 97, and he pitched four innings yesterday without allowing a hit. His ERA on the year is 2.3, 17 strikeouts and 15 and two-third innings. He's 21 now, and they're starting to stretch him out. His first outing, he only went one inning, but he's gone at least three innings each of his last four times out. So he's one guy who I think Dodger fans should keep an eye on as another deep sleeper, if I can borrow a phrase. Another guy is Juan Noriega, who I've mentioned in this podcast before. Mini-me, listed at 5'7", which is maybe his height in heels. He has not allowed a run this year in 12 innings, and I thought that he was kind of a junk baller, soft tosser, who could just, you know, throw his breaking ball past guys, but then I heard him up to 93, I think I mentioned that last time, and, you know, he pitched a few days ago, two innings, three hits, no runs, so he is maintaining that air of perfection, which is very, very intriguing. Who else is there on the Loons that you want to talk about, Dustin?
Yeah, you hit Noriega, you hit Dominguez, right?
Mm-hmm.
You hit Dominguez. You know, the Loons, they're not as stacked as we thought they were going to be, especially on the offensive side. But James Baldwin, I know it's going away from the pitching, but he's turned it around. He started the season 1-for-30. It's not me misspeaking. He was 1-for-30.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't strike out today, but he still has 21 strikeouts in 16 games. So that's I think that's probably going to be a concern with him going forward. But the fact that he's finally putting the ball on the bat on the ball is helping him obviously have success. He drew a couple walks today. He's stolen 7 out of 8 bases. So, you know, he's got all the talent. And I think I remember with L.A. Dodger Talk last year in spring training, you guys interviewed Logan White, and I believe Mark Timmons posted that White is Matt Kemp high, quote-unquote, on James Baldwin. Now, it remains to be seen if he'll reach that potential, but it's there, and that's what causes people to rank him as highly as they do in preseason rankings without having a lot of minor league experience or the solid numbers to back it up.
Yeah, I mean, when I think when he's compared to Matt Kemp, I think that's just based on pure athleticism and size. He's not as filled out as Kemp. You know, Kemp is a big guy, you know, 6'4 and probably solid 220. Baldwin's about 6'3, but skinnier at about 190. But they have very similar profiles. They're both just prolific athletes. They got the speed, power potential, although Baldwin hasn't really shown it yet. He started to show it last year by hitting a handful of home runs early, but he's more just trying to make contact right now, and it's working. He's got a 7-game hit streak. He's batting well over 300 over that time. He's still struggling against lefties, but that's something that's going to come with more experience. And I think Logan White compared him to Dexter Fowler, which I think would be more of a fair comparison in terms of production. I mean, I'm not going to be the one to say, oh, yeah, you know, Baldwin's going to go 50-50. Baldwin's going to be a MVP. But yeah, I think he's definitely a guy worth watching, given the fact that I saw part of the game today, and he looked like he was really shortening up in his swing, really short to the ball, really quick to the ball, and that's something that's definitely going to be helping him. What about our boy Jesus Arredondo?
Yeah, he didn't play for a few days, but he got back to it finally. The guys at Baseball America kind of disappointed me by not answering my question. I've asked Kevin Goldstein a couple of times what he knows about Arredondo. I haven't gotten any replies yet, so I do not have any update on him other than what his numbers tell me, and not factoring in what he did today, but he's got a 400 on base percentage, you know, in a pitcher's league down there with the Midwest League, but, you know, there's not a whole lot to know about him other than what you see on paper in terms of stats. He hasn't hit a home run, but he does have 6 doubles and a triple on the season, so, and he'll take a walk. He's got 6 walks in 57 at-bats before today's game, so he's been playing DH a lot, if you can play DH, but he's also been playing second base. He's listed as a shortstop. I don't believe he's a shortstop just because he's been playing second base pretty much the entire season.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a misreading for whoever wrote that down on the site. He has not played short at all, and watching him play even briefly, you can tell that he is probably better suited for second base. It looks like the Dodgers have a few decent young second basemen, not high, you know, upside guys, but decent guys worth following with Arredondo and Wingo, and hopefully one or the other will be able to take over for Mark Ellis when his time comes. So that just about does it for this edition of Dugout Blues. Be sure to visit our websites, ladugout.com and Feeling Kinda Blue. For Dustin Nosler, I'm Jared Massey, saying thank you for listening. We will see you next time.